Bruce Wayne meets Clark Kent. I love it. I love bringing people together. How are we?
Lex.
Hi, hello. Lex, it is a pleasure. Ow, wow, that is a good grip. You should not pick a fight with this person.
The greatest gladiator match in the history of the world. Son of Krypton versus Bat of Gotham.
It's time you learn what it means to be a man.
Stay down! If I wanted it, you'd be dead already.
Man won't kill God.
The devil will do it.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to On the Comic Couch Radio. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Happy Easter.
Happy. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Happy Easter to you as well. All right, let's go over the short format very quickly so people know what to expect on today's show. We're going to do our in news, we're going to do our review of Batman vs. Superman. And, of course, we're going to do the big segment that we're going to do in every single episode of Comic Couch Radio going forward, Slate Them or Rate Them. We're going to cover Best Picture of 1971, what Daz has been reading, and what Daz has been watching in film. So that's the format of today's show. But before we do go into this week's show, if you haven't already listened to our interview with Arvin Batista of Greasy Pig Studios, we talk the Dazzler music video as well as the Lily Cheney music video with the New Mutants. So if you haven't already, check that out. I'll be sure to link that in the description. And it's a great interview. Me and Dazza had a great time. The guy seems pretty knowledgeable of all things New Mutants, at least as far as the 1980s is concerned. So if you haven't already, check that show out. All right, let's go into our new segment of the show. We are going to talk the film Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, this is pretty much the only news that anyone is actually talking about this week. It's sort of, you know, a film that people have been waiting on for years. And everyone's, basically it's a film that everyone has an opinion on, you know, whether it's good or bad. And going to the cinema this week, I went on Friday. And already the reviews were starting to come in. And the reviews, let's face it, were less than stellar. You know, there was sort of a big disappointment. A lot of people didn't like it. Some people thought it was okay. But I went in it because a lot of my personal film tastes are basically off the board, shall we say. There's films that I absolutely love that have been slated. There's films that I absolutely hate, which have been loved. So I went into it with an open mind. And I have to say, just my absolutely honest opinion is that I did like the film. Mm-hmm. I was entertained by it, but you know, for such a long film, for 2.5 hours, it flew by for me.
I had the opposite opinion. I thought this movie dragged forever.
Really?
Ever.
Yeah. I personally liked it. I didn't love it. When I come away from a cinema and I've absolutely love the film. I sort of get a feel this as I'm walking away from the cinema. I feel like this, like, sort of this need to strut. I'm so happy about seeing the film. You know, when I went to see Deadpool and when I went to see Star Wars Force Awakens, I came away, I was sitting in such a good mood. I was sort of like, really hyped and like everything. And with this one, it was more like that was okay. I didn't think it was as bad as what everyone was sort of making out to, but it wasn't a film that I absolutely loved. I mean, the things that I really did like about it, you know, the positives, I thought Ben Affleck was great. You know, I absolutely love the Batman stuff in there and the stuff with Alfred and everything. Henry Cavill, I actually felt a lot better about him as Superman than I did in Man of Steel. I think he was sort of, you know, a lot better in the role, even though, frankly, there wasn't a lot for him to do at times. I like the Wonder Woman stuff. I thought she was fine. I thought that brought a fun element to it. I enjoyed the fight scenes. For the most part, I enjoyed the actual fight between Batman and Superman. I did enjoy the stuff with Doomsday eventually, even though I didn't like the look of the character and the fact that we just turned him into this sort of, and I know we got the spikes later, but when he first came out there, he just looked like one of the demons from the Hobbit movies. and I'm not a massive fan of CGI anyway. So there was a lot that I liked about it. Where I really, and it's strange because it felt to me, just my opinion, where he felt so tantalizingly close to being really, really good. Because I think, the film looked good, but they shot a lot of really good stuff. But the actual storytelling on it was real where it sort of faltered for me. I think for me, one of the key things in it was the actual motivations in this film. Batman's motivation was, you know, totally understood where he was coming from and everything, you know, was really on board with that. Superman had a motivation as well, start off in the fact that he basically thought that Batman was, you know, a menace, and he was basically sort of trampling on people's human rights and stuff. And I thought, this is where that was going. And then that motivation just seemed to, like, you know, disappear, just faded away. And instead, you had this, like, really weird thing where, and it was where Lex Luthor basically sort of revealed his hand in it. In fact, actually, I just should point out, in case that, you know, anyone's not seen it yet, we are basically talking spoilers here, you know, because we've had a weekend to see it. If you're listening to this, we're going to talk spoilers.
Yeah, I'll be sure to post that in the description. Major spoilers for Batman vs. Superman if you haven't already seen.
Yeah. The bit where Lex Luthor kidnaps Superman's mother to force Superman to fight Batman, that really took me out of the actual fight thing, because what I wanted from the actual, and it seemed really forced as well to get Superman into this fight, what I sort of wanted was Batman's, you know, going, you're a menace to the world, you're dangerous, you need to be taken down, and Superman saying, you're a menace to society, you need to be stopped, you need to be taken down, and then two of them going at it and really believing it. But what you had is you had Batman really, really, you know, believing in what he was doing, and Superman sort of fighting, but not wanting to fight, and wanting to basically sort of, like, you know, and it was all like a misunderstanding as such, and that really took me out of it. I really wanted, a no holds barred, both guys wanting to beat each other. It just, that took me out of it. And the reasoning behind Lex Luthor's plot when he got that little timer and said, "This is how long you've got to kill Batman, otherwise I'll kill your mom." It's like, Superman flew across from Metropolis to Mexico in the bat of an eye to save that girl. That time is, and he's got the super hearing and everything. That time is basically enough time for him to basically search around for his mum and rescue her. You know what I mean? You know, he went all the way to Afghanistan or wherever it was to basically save Lois Lane from a terrorist. He could have done the same thing here. So I know there's always plot holes in these films, but that was something that basically, that whole motivation there just took me out of it. Lex Luthor's motivation, it was kind of hinted at one or two times, but it seemed to be that, because he was the one pulling the strings and basically getting to fight, which I was fine with, but it never really explained, you know, what his sort of, you know, why he wanted to do that, except for the fact that he's Lex Luthor and he just does evil things. But didn't basically, sort of, to me, put enough of his hatred for Superman. There was like little hints about it when he's talked about his granddad, how he had to basically sort of bow to a dictator and stuff. And there were these little hints where he was basically bringing up files and all the other members of it who would be the Justice League later on. You know, so there was little hints, but it never sort of, you know, clarified itself. And that to me was like a really big, you know, mess, you know, in the film. And, for an hour and a half of this film, I was like really enjoying it. I thought, this is like building up really good, this, you know, thing. And then it just kind of, from that moment, it just kind of fell apart for me. And even though I enjoyed the action scenes, it just didn't gel enough for me. I mean, it's like early on, but they started it with this great scene where sort of, where it basically took you back to the events of Man of Steel, and you're seeing it through like Bruce Wayne's eyes and everything. I thought both scenes were great, and it sort of, it made Man of Steel mean all the carnage and everything and that mean more, because obviously we're going to basically sort of be, we're going to address that and see it from, like, you know, his point of view. And then you just sort of went through, like, the next scene, everybody's like loving Superman. He's got a monument and everything. And we didn't really, there was no like explanation of how he got into people's hearts. We had this scene later on where he showed a montage of his saving people. And I thought that would have been better, like, at the start of the film, to sort of establish that what Superman's been doing in that time, that he's sort of becoming like a beloved figure. And I just thought the actual, you know, the storytelling, the editing, it was just kind of just all over the place for me. And that sort of, you know, really took it down. And that, those were the elements that I thought was, like, you know, really, really, you know, disappointing for me, is the actual, you know, the story. And there were certain scenes that basically were just sort of in there that I thought didn't need to be. I mean, a bit where sort of Superman's on, and this is little things where he's on the mountaintop and things like that. It just seemed the whole sort of, you know, although I wasn't sort of bothered by the pace of a film, it's sort of like, you know, you know, I was never, I'll be honest, for the entire film, I was never actually bored or anything. I was just sort of really into the movie. It was just those elements of the story just didn't, you know, it just took me out of it. I wanted more from that. And it just sort of, I think it dropped the ball on so many things in that way.
Okay. You were doing your review, and as opposed to going, you know, back and forth, considering, you know, I already had the other comic show with Alex and Dave, I was like, you know what, just get out of Daz's way. Just let him do his review. I have a couple thoughts as well, and if you feel like commenting on, feel free to jump in over where you feel like. Now, you there's lots of things you touched on in your review, and one of the things was, there's a lot of plot holes in this film, and it felt like a dumb film. It felt like they justified, sort of like akin to, like, I don't know how many of the listeners actually are inside baseball as far as all things pro wrestling, but I felt like so many times in this movie they justified things not making sense by, well, it's a comic book movie and no one's really going to care. It's like, well, as someone who, you know, who considers himself an intelligent young adult, it's like, when you do stuff like that, it comes off a slap in the face, and just because you're dealing with these over-the-top characters doesn't mean the story can't make sense. You were right when you review, you were saying there's tons of instances where their motivation wasn't super clear. And going into that, to a degree, the reason why they stopped fighting, and this is something
I forgot to mention
like I said, we're talking spoilers, so obviously I'm going to go into it now. The reason why he chooses to stop, the reason why he doesn't kill Superman, is because they have the same, their mothers have the same name.
Yeah, that's what got them to stop. I mean, when it became clear that is what was bringing the fight to an end, I just wanted to slap my head, you know, because the fight itself, you know, was great. And what surprised me is we actually got a winner in a way. True. You know, I actually thought that, you know, it was going to be come to some sort of like draw or something, like, you know, they actually, you know, Batman won the fight, you know, whether he killed him or not, he had him beat, he won the fight. And then when we sort of stopped to this thing, and it was, but it wasn't just the fact that that's what kind of brought the fight into the thing. It was how jarring they suddenly went from, I'm about to kill you, to, right, we're on the same side now.
Okay, and it was, to play devil's advocate at least a little bit, it sort of reminded him why he became Batman in the first place. Not, like I said, I don't agree with this, but I'm playing devil's advocate to be fair. He may have thought, you know, in all his crusade against Superman, I think he forgot at the end of the day what made him Batman, and sort of going back to what makes the character is Batman doesn't kill. So he may not like Superman. He may think he's still a giant threat, but at the end of the day, Batman doesn't kill.
Mike to kill, so, yeah. but this is another thing that I had a fault with it. You've kind of had to sort of like thought to yourself and to rationalize to yourself why he did that sort of thing. And this crops up in a lot kind of in the film. Like, people have to like really dig and sort of remember why, you know, why Lex Luthor, you know, and come up with reasons why he's doing what he was doing. You shouldn't have to sort of like piece together the moments yourself in the film, but those clues should be quite evident and there for you. I mean, the bit where he sort of like, you know, I get what you're saying, where he basically, that sort of like brought him out, where he sort of remembered the mother, and that sort of affected him because he lost his mother and stuff. But it was kind of how jarring it actually changed. You know, if it had done a thing where sort of Batman kind of sort of like said, okay, we're going to do a truce for now, but this isn't over. You know what I mean? Something along those lines, so that it was basically not everything has been resolved. Obviously, Lex is playing us, so that, you know, so we're going to sort this out and get this settled. But afterwards, you know, we've still got an issue. Not everything has changed just because of this sort of thing. You know what I mean? Mm. And he even uses the phrase when Batman rescues Clark's mum, he actually uses a friend, the phrase, I'm a friend of your son, sort of thing.
That was one of the cute moments in the movie. Yeah, I'll admit I like that scene.
Yeah. And it just, I don't know. It just, but those elements, like that, it was just really, really, you know, bad storytelling. And that's the thing, but there's so much sort of good stuff in there.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. The entire film as itself, as a whole, isn't that great, but it's one of these things to where its parts are better than its sum. There's aspects of this movie, and there's ideas that they play with, and there's things that they establish in this film that are really good. There are things that I'm like, there's really good parts of a good film here, but when you put them all together, it's a really bad outing altogether.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. You hear a lot about films where basically studios have basically come in and sort of like, you know, like had a say in the editing and stuff like that. I think this is a film where basically, they could have done with someone going into it, going over and saying like, okay, you need to tighten this up. You need to change this. You need to put some things in. Cause what the shot was great, but there was just a lot. And I personally think this was close to being a really good film. I just think they got they got things wrong, like the motivation and, the fact that, you know, I mean, another thing is sort of, you know, Doomsday, which I personally didn't like them using the character because to me, Doomsday should be a Doomsday Superman film so they can do with death. I guess they did it a little bit here, but whatever. This is what they wanted to do with Doomsday. But bringing that whole sort of thing, how he was created, it was kind of like, okay, what's happening here? But he's adding human blood to General Zod. How is that creating Doomsday? And then he just basically releases him in thing with no sort of like introduction. To me, it would have been better for the basically sort of introduce Doomsday, not all out, but basically have him sort of created earlier and maybe have like Luther waking him up and sort of establishing that he had this guy in reserve and that this guy was like a real dangerous thing. Something like that. These little sort of like teasers early on instead of just basically bringing him out there. And it just sort of, like I said, I think it was, you know, so close to being a good film, but they just sort of, you know, the storytelling. I mean, another thing is, Lois Lane is basically had pretty much nothing to do for most of his film, except when she got kidnapped and came and basically threw away the spear, which she then had to go back and get and then nearly drowned herself.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. They could have had some, I mean, to me, they could have had some sort of storyline with her where she's, and have sort of, something going on with Lex Luthor where she was sort of investigating, because that's what they've done in other films. You know, you've got an investigative reporter there. They could have basically had her basically investigating Luthor and she finds out that he's basically been manipulating things, you know, behind the scenes to get them to both to fight. You know, but just sort of things they could have done. Another thing as well, I mean, I'm not a fan of dream sequences or sort of like visions of that sort. It's just not, I always think it's a bit of a cheat. There was one scene where it had basically the Flash cameo. And that sort of, after I'd seen that, I was like really confused. I was thinking, okay, what, because it just seemed to come from nowhere. And it was kind of like, okay, did that actually happen or was that part of the dream sequence? And, you know, it was just like, you know, a really weird, because it happened straight after the dream sequence. And then it was kind of like, well, where did the dream come from? Is this actually, because obviously it can't just be a dream, because this is like a vision of the future, because you see the Darkseid symbol and everything. So there's always something there to it. But it was just like that sort of like scene with the Flash. It just kind of like, it was just like really weird. It was like, you know, obviously it's not a dream, but how it was edited together kind of looked like that. And afterwards, like, Bruce just kind of like, he didn't sort of go, oh, that was weird. He just kind of shrugged it off. Do you know what I mean? It just sort of...
Yeah, I sort of see where you're coming from as far as that's concerned.
I mean, obviously, the whole thing, is the theme of it as well, is Dawn of Justice. So they were building up these sort of, you know, these other members who they're going to find afterwards. But, I mean, even that, they could have used it as part of, like, Lex's motivation. They could have had it that he sort of... Because if you go back to the first Superman film, and the Lex Luthor character in that doesn't basically go out just to kill Superman, just to kill him. It basically attempts to kill Superman because he's got this massive plot that he's enacted, this like crime of the century, and then Superman comes along and he realizes that his plan will never succeed while Superman's there. So he then has to go on this site, he has to steal the kryptonite and everything to basically, you know, to kill Superman before he can implement this plot. And you could have had something in there where basically Lex, feels that Superman is going to, you know, the existence of Superman eventually, he's going to bring him into contact with, into conflict with his sort of criminal agenda of some sort. And so he's basically getting a jump start on the metahumans and wanting to basically deal with them now rather than later. But, you know, and at least then you would have some sort of, like, you know, motivation in there of why he's basically keeping tracks on these people. But again, nothing like that ever came. We just had sort of like Luther coming along, but he's just this sort of, like, you know, wacky, unstable guy, and he's just doing things because he's Luther.
That's sort of my problem with the film as well. I never understood. I understood Luther's motivation, but his means never seemed to make any sense to me. So he was cool with Batman killing Superman, but he was cool with Batman dying because that never made any sense to me. I never understood his motivation for wanting to kill Batman as well, hoping that maybe they'd both kill each other. I'm like, I understand his motivation was to either, if not kill, openly kill Superman, just to make the public think twice about him, at least get them to turn on him. But I just, like you said, I didn't understand his motivations. When he talked about Batman dying, I'm like, I don't know why he wanted Batman to die from me. And if he had this doomsday plan in his back pocket, I don't understand why did he need to go about this plan to get them to fight when he had that in his back pocket, knowing full well Doomsday was more than capable. And here's my question as well. Why was Doomsday implicit with all the things that Luther wanted to do? They never established any of that. All they established was Doomsday was this killer thing made of Kryptonian blood as well as human blood that wanted to kill Superman. Why did it want to kill Superman? I have no idea. Why was it loyal to Luther? I don't know. What Luther was thinking, should everything work out the way Luther wanted to, it's like, well, then you would have had this monster that no one would have been able to kill, so I don't understand what the plan was that would have been.
I mean, that whole thing about the ship was really confusing anyway, because it didn't sort of, when he sort of had this thing that he wanted to get over knowledge, this knowledge, was it something that he was just going to be able to read through? Was it being sent into his head and everything, stuff like that? And the whole sort of, yeah, I mean, you didn't get a sense when he basically was Doomsday, basically Zod, resurrected, but just like, you know, a savage self. Again, that could have been something that if it had basically sort of resurrected him early and had him sort of in this thing, they could have had maybe shown Luther talking to him and showing him like images of Superman and then shown like sort of Doomsday getting angry so that he sort of, even though he was a savage, he sort of remembered from his past life that it was Superman that had sort of killed him. So he had this automatic enmity towards Superman. You know, but just things that they could have done. And this was stuff that I was basically just like thinking of as I was driving home. And if I can sort of think of it, this is one of these things as well where you think, didn't people actually sort of step in and say, this bit's not working? Like, and I know it's, and this is something that a lot of people have brought up about the Martha thing, is that didn't people sort of say as we're sort of writing it or filming it and just saying, look, this bit's weak. You know, we need some sort of stronger thing that brings them together rather than, you know, our mums had the same name and, you know, oh, your mum died as well and stuff like that. It just sort of, it was just some sort of like, you know, bad writing elements in there. And it's a shame because I think there was so much possibility.
I think just lazy. Because I think they're going with the assumption that most theater goers are going to be, whatever, it's a dumb comic book movie. If it doesn't make sense, whatever, I don't care. I'm not interested in this. I'm not invested in this. Whatever. But as someone who's read comic books, who kind of is personally invested in this being good and people having a good connotation of all things comic books, it's like, it's kind of a letdown. Because I'm sure maybe your average moviegoer will watch this and be like, whatever, it doesn't make sense, it's a comic book thing, I don't care, I've never read comic books, I'm never going to read comic books, if anything, this establishes why I shouldn't be reading comic books, because it's sort of an insult to your intelligence. Example, this movie.
Yeah. And I mean, if that's the way of thinking, of making a massive, you know, mistake on this, because sort of, you know, your comic books here, film movies have sort of, you know, gone beyond that now. And they basically, you know, we need to check the feel, you know, because there is so much. The ones who are basically going to make the loudest noises about this film are going to be your sort of, like, you know, your hardcore fans. I'm not saying you've got to tailor everything towards that, but you've got to sort of like, you know, have in mind that, you know, sort of, you know, the expectations for this film. The actual, you know, the hype for this film has been more than for any film. I think it was more than the Avengers because of the fact that the two characters were so recognisable. So, you know, if they're sort of thinking, well, we can get away with stuff like that, that's a massive mistake. I mean, it's really weird because I've never known a movie that I've sort of talked about where I could see so many massive flaws in it, yet still walk away from it, sort of, you know, liking it and enjoying it. I mean, if one of my friends was said to me that, you know, they were going and we needed someone to go with, you know, I will see this film again.
There's enough to like about this film, and I'm sort of I'm parroting what you're saying. This is not a good film, but it's also, I wouldn't say it's a terrible film.
No, I don't think it's the disaster the reviews and the like, you know, because people keep going on the ratings for Rotten Tomatoes and that, which is a kind of a flawed system to go by anyway. But, you know, it's not the disaster that I think people, you know, have been sort of like, you know, portraying it as. It's just a disappointment. I mean, I have to say that the thing that I did do real well is walking out of this film is I was really looking forward to a Ben Affleck Batman solo movie after this.
which wasn't their design, because obviously they have all these other characters that they want to get over. The Cyborgs, the Flashes, the Aquamans, the Wonder Woman. And that wasn't supposed to be their objective, but that's what wound up happening. It's like,
yeah,
you know, the Affleck Batman, for the most part, you know, there's a couple things that I'm sure most people didn't much care for. But for the most part, it's a pretty faithful adaptation of what most people think of Batman. And all things considered, I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I have to say as well, I'm looking forward to a Wonder Woman film because I think like, that she had a lot of screen presence, and I mean, there was one bit as well where she sort of like took this blow from Doomsday and she falls on the back, and the look on her face when she sort of looks at Doomsday, she's kind of just this look as if she's like really enjoying being in the fight. Like, you know, she's a real, like, amateur, you know, she's a real warrior. Yeah, she's got this look about it. And I actually love that. So I was kind of, I'd be looking forward to a Wonder Woman film. I'd even like to, you know, I'd even be looking forward to a Justice League film.
I'm interested for. But what you were talking about earlier was the reveal of Wonder Woman. Sort of what I want to talk about. Now, obviously, they went in with the idea is we got to get Wonder Woman over huge. And when they finally do the big reveal, it is, in fact, a very big deal, but the thing is, it was a little too over the top. I mean, I still liked it, and it still got me pumped when they actually did the reveal, but the music, that's the thing I need to talk about. The music was so, it really, they were presenting Wonder Woman as this, you know, on par with Batman and Superman. She's this badass that you need to get behind, and is a really cool character, and they do that, but just the music puts it, I think, a little too over the top to where it comes off, it comes off cartoony.
You know where you've described it, and it's just sort of made me think of this. Imagine a load of heel wrestlers beating up The Rock, and then the music, the glass breaks music.
And that's everyone, what it is. That's the perfect analogy. It's the Stone Cold glass breaking when the baby faces are being beaten on.
Yeah. And you're always meant to go, yay! But guess what? It worked on me.
it worked on me too, but it's like, it's one of those things to where I'm trying to think, and if, for those of you who haven't seen, it's like there's like this guitar riff, and it keeps going whenever they have anything with Wonder Woman. And it's fine, and it does what, it does its objective to get Wonder Woman over and get you pumped. It's like, yeah, this is the character that's even better than the two previously established characters, but it's a little too over the top. That's my only thing. It is one of those things like pro wrestling to where it's a little, you know, it's great and it does its objective, like I said, but it's a little cheesy.
Yeah, it is a little cheesy, but then again, a lot of people have basically, you know, one of the things I really didn't like about this film was the tone and the fact that, oh God, you know, I wanted some fun, so like a Marvel movie. And I guess this does give you that, you know, it gives you a bit to sort of like cheer and stuff like that. I mean, I have to say one of the things that basically the criticism about this is that the tone of the film is so heavy and dark and everything like that. And I've got to say, I didn't have a problem with that at all. Well, you know, I didn't, you know, that didn't affect me. I quite, you know, the tone, I quite liked, to be perfectly honest. That did not put me off this film at all.
So, sort of where you were going back when we were doing our sort of our recap of our review, what we thought of the film as a whole. this wasn't a bad film, and like you said, the darkness of it, I felt like they were doing that to differentiate themselves with Marvel, which is fine because that's what you want to do. You don't want to just, although you could argue maybe you could just piggyback off that success and try to do something similar to that. But to their credit, they decided to go in a different direction to see maybe if this darker, maybe to a degree more realistic world would be better. And it didn't work, but I thank them for at least trying. It's something that I'm glad they're willing to take risks as far as that's concerned. But the one thing I need to emphasize more than anything, like we said, this isn't a terrible film. And a lot of the people that are invested in saying this is a bad film, and I realize you can't pretend like you're living in a bubble. But if you compare this film to all the Marvel properties or even the Fox properties, yeah, it isn't as good as those. Now, for that, you'd be eager to say, "Oh, it's a bad film," and you'd probably be right in more instances than not. But if you watch this in a bubble, in a mindset, this is just something that I'm going in cold, and I'm not going to compare this to anything else I'm going, it's still a pretty good film. Like I said, it's one of those things where you can't ignore the other films that are still and television properties that are out there. But at the same time, it's like, well, if you watch this with a clear mind and not thinking of those other films, I'm hesitant to say decent, but it's a so-so film.
Yeah. I mean, my personal rating out of 5 for what it's worth, I'd probably go 3.25, maybe 3.5, because I did basically get in a lot of enjoyment out of it. It's just that you just see the flaws and you think, you know, just what could have been if it sort of, you know, if it got the story down to pat, you know, and got things in the right order and just sort of, you know, I think it could have been, you know, I think they had something here and they just dropped the ball on so many elements of it.
Yeah, if we're dealing with numbers like you just previously illustrated, I'd probably go with maybe a 2.5, 2.75 maybe. Maybe if this was a letter grade, I'd give it a C-. It's one of those things where it barely musters up to like a watchable film.
Hmm.
So,
but I mean, I would say to people, you know, go. It is a film which I think, in one way or another, is worth seeing for yourself.
And that was my mentality of this. I saw the reviews, and I was hoping, despite what I previously thought, that maybe they would have found a way to pull out a good film. But with that said, and I think I kind of sort of see where they're coming from with this. I'm going to see the film no matter what, good, bad, or indifferent. What most people think about it. It's true, people like me and people, the baseline of fans, regardless of the quality, we're going to see it. I saw Fantastic Four. There's nothing I won't watch, clearly.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things to where, you know, I mean, to a degree, they sort of don't need to listen to the base of that comic book reader or even that casual person, so because they know they're going to watch the film no matter what. But the thing is, I think you need to make a good film if you want to get those casual people that know nothing about superheroes that just watch film to watch good films. I think those are the people that you're going to turn off.
Yeah.
All right. And so when you're dealing with, like, it's making a lot of money this weekend because people just, you know, just out of curiosity or don't know any better. It's the weekend after is the one I'm looking at. Now that's the sign of a good film or something that's had good buzz around it, is how it does the weekend after. And this is a film I think it's going to do poorly the weekend after.
Mm.
Okay, so unless you have any more thoughts on Batman versus
Superman? I think I'm pretty much done. I think I've pretty much said everything that I want. It's an enjoyable film. I think I actually enjoyed it more than a lot of people, but it was flawed. I have to say as well, when I left the theatre, because the theatre that I went in was absolutely packed.
Mm-hmm.
And normally for these films, you get like a sense of sort of, you get people like, there's either like this excited buzz, or like this real sort of like, oh God, that was crap sort of thing. And this one was real weird because no one was talking as we left the theatre. It was kind of like this sort of like a, it was kind of, if you were to put it into word, it'd be just like, meh. You know, just sort of just like a, for a crowd of people, there just wasn't that sort of buzz for it. But, you know, but I think we've pretty much, we've sorted Batman v Superman there.
that was a 30-minute review for those of you who are still interested. Let's move on to our new previously established segment, Slate Them or Rate Them. Now, last week we did 1970s films, the top grossing films. So to keep up with that tradition, we're moving on to the year after, 1971. We are going to go to the top 10 films as far as box office is concerned. And we're going to go from number 10 to number 1. So let's start with number 10, Dazza.
And then we're going to pick a one we rate and one we slate.
Correct. So yes. Starting from number 10, Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, 1971. All right, for number 9, Willard. Number 8, Summer of 42. Number 7, A Clockwork Orange. Number 6, Dirty Harry. Number 5, Carnal Knowledge. Number 4, Fiddler on the Roof. Number 3, The French Connection. Number 2, Billy Jack. And at number 1, Diamonds Are Forever. Okay, let's go into our first segment. Rate them. Now, Dazzo, of these four films, what's the one that you got to rate?
It's easy for me. The one I'm going to rate is Dirty Harry.
Ooh, I was tempted to go in that direction. Because when I saw these films, I'm like, God, there's so many great ones. It's hard to pick one over the other. But that's the one I didn't pick. But
yeah.
But with that said, that was my number two pick. That's a fantastic pick. I can't argue with that. Did you want to maybe extrapolate why you decided to go with Dirty Harry?
Yeah, I mean personally, if you don't like Clint Eastwood films, then I don't know what to say to you. Particularly if
you're a lost cause.
Because Clint Eastwood just one of the coolest characters out there. Dirty Harry is such a great character. I mean, politically, it's one of these films that since it sort of gets a raw deal, because it is basically got a lot of right-wing sensibilities, mm-hmm. It's sort of, how it basically deals with, crime and everything like that. But, I just think it's absolutely amazing in this film. It's just such a, a great, unforgiving character. But what this film has for me, which is one of the greatest things, is this has one of the greatest villains in film ever. Because Scorpio, the villain on it, was basically the one who was like holding the city to ransom by basically sniping people, stuff like that. His character is so absolutely loathsome. he's this really weedy guy who's basically sort of who's psychotic. When he's basically called to account for what he did, he sort of whines and cries and everything. He steals that bus of the school children. He's getting them all to sing "Row, Row, Row Your Boat," and you would just love to absolutely get this guy and just absolutely strangle the life out of him. He's just so horrible, and you really want Harry to basically take the guy down. And the film itself has so many sort of like really good shots. I mean, there's one shot that always sticks to me. It's a bit really haunting and everything. It's where Harry shoots Scorpio in the leg on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where Scorpio's basically kidnapped this girl and he's basically buried her somewhere. She's basically running oxygen. So he's sort of like, he's pointing the gun at him and saying, where's the girl? And Scorpio's basically just like screaming and crying how he has the right to a lawyer and everything. And how he basically just starts standing on his leg where he shot him. And the camera basically pans back. It's like a helicopter shot. So it basically pans back and then sort of zooms away from like the you can see him even in the distance, so it's like putting pressure on the leg and everything, and it's just this like really amazingly done shot. And there's just so many I mean, there's so many great one-liners in this film, and which I'm not going to sort of like do any of the speeches, because I just couldn't do them justice. But the whole sort of like the whole do you feel lucky punk and everything like that, it's just there's just so many so much good stuff in this film, and Clint Eastwood was just absolutely awesome in it. It's just an amazing film. And yeah, I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite films of all time.
Okay. And for me, I'm going to go with Diamonds Are Forever. It's when I'm looking at this list, Dirty Harry, great pick. You already picked it. Great film. I can't not pick a James Bond film. I'm such a huge fan of the franchise and all things James Bond. And I've seen, I'd say maybe 90% of the films. And more often than not, they tend to be fantastic and amazing. And Diamonds Are Forever, it's right there. Right in front of the title track, you're in for a good time. And considering this is just one of the classics of the franchise, I can't not pick anything against this. So that's going to be my rate them for this week. Diamonds Are Forever, and from Dazza, it's going to be Dirty Harry. So let's move on to our next segment, Slate Them. This one, I'm going to take great pleasure on this, but I'm going to let you go first, Dazza, because this is your segment.
Okay. I have to say, there's quite a lot of these films which I have not seen. You know, I saw the Sweet Sweet Backs Badass song, you know, once, but wasn't really sort of paying attention to it or anything. Will Arday had to actually, you know, quite a few of these actually had to sort of to look up. The one I'm probably gonna slate is actually Diamonds Are Forever.
You son of a bitch.
The thing is, I'm a really big James Bond fan as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely sort of, you know, love a lot of the James Bond films. It's just that with Diamonds Are Forever, it just felt, this one was one of my least favorite. It just felt a little corny to me because it sort of set.
James Bond film was corny, you say? Do tell.
Yeah, I know, but this one especially so quick. It's all the gangster stuff in it, the sort of, They just seems like such, like, you know, stereotypical, like, gangsters and stuff. And I think the thing is as well, I mean, this is Sean Connery was looking, you know, well past it by this point. I mean, he'd already left once. Mm-hmm. He actually did come back, into it after George Lazenby decided after doing one film that there was no future in franchises and stuff, like, you know, which is, like, you know, great, you know, a great career choice there. I'm picking this partly because for so many of your films I've not actually seen, but also with this one, it's one of my least favourite of the James Bond films. That's the one I'm gonna pick. And I have to say, like, because I am a big James Bond fan, I don't know if you ever sort of, I wrote an article on the Half Guarder, which you can still track down, where I basically sort of talk about the theory of why I think there's basically that James Bond is actually the code name as opposed to basically one guy. Ooh, throughout the years. Yes. And I put all the evidence in that. In fact, Diamonds Are Forever is actually quite a pivotal film in that theory, so I get quite a lot of out of there, so that's still on Half Guarder. But yeah, I'm going to pick that as my slate. I just don't, it just didn't hit me as a great James Bond film. I just had to, you know, it just sort of, yeah, that one I was just not a fan of.
Okay. And okay, you've kind of upset me, but with my pick for the one I'm going to slate is something that I'm sure you may also have problems with as well. This, I'm sure if most people that are big on cinema that may be listening to this for the first time are going to have a problem with this. But the one is, my biggest problem with it is, of course, the way this director goes about doing most of his films. I'm of course referring to Stanley Kubrick and A Clockwork Orange. Now, I know why this is a classic film, because it had many of those memorable lines and scenes that everyone is familiar with. But just his storytelling as far as films are concerned, I can't stand. I call it paint drying storytelling. It's just so slow and so boring. And you'll take an idea of a film, a story that maybe wouldn't have been a major motion picture, but he does these scenes where it feels like he puts the camera there and he just lets the scene happen. And that's fine for maybe to some degree for some kind of a couple of film goers. But for me, it's just, it's agonizing. Daz, have you seen Clockwork Orange?
I have. It's an interesting one, because I wanted to say something about Clockwork Orange anyway. Is that I didn't see Clockwork Orange until I was in my 20s. And the reason for that is it was actually, it was banned in the UK. Banned as in, on video or cinema or anything like that. It wasn't banned because of violence or anything like that. Stanley Kubrick basically exercised his rights to basically for it not to be shown anywhere in the UK, which I'm guessing he couldn't do the rest of the world. The only way you could see it would be to get it on like a bootleg, which is how I eventually saw it. I know someone who basically bought it at a dodgy market in Camden Market down in London. Once he died, then the film became available again. You now can see it on TV and on DVD and everything. And I have to admit, when I watched it, I was like, you know, really disappointed.
Cause it's supposed to be this classic film that has a cult following. And when you think of some of the best pictures of all time, they'll show like maybe a retrospective of films from the 70s or just films of all history. And they'll include scenes from A Clockwork Orange. I'm like, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those films that it's got so much. lots of like iconic stuff in it. I mean, it's got like the iconic, you know, uniform with the sort of white bowler hat and everything and stuff like that, which I think, you know, on one of the Simpsons episodes or for Halloween, Bart actually dresses as one of the, you know, one of those characters. And there are some sort of good performances in it. I mean, the lead guy in it, I think is really good in it. And there's some iconic things like when he's sort of singing in the rain and stuff like that. But generally, it's just kind of, it takes a sort of, like you say, it takes like a, you know, a point about sort of like, you know, free will and self-determination, and then just like beats you massively over the head with it. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's from that sort of like that 70s, it's a very 70s film in that they were basically doing experimental stuff that you were basically, you didn't really know what direction that they were coming from. And it was basically when, this is kind of when the sort of like, you know, art house cinema was like, you know, a really big thing and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, I agree with it. It's just not sort of, I have to admit, it was one I was sort of considering doing the slating one, but I just sort of, you know, it's, yeah, it's just, I personally find it sort of quite a slog. I mean, I've only ever seen it the once. I mean, I think another time I watched like half of it with a friend. And we just kind of just got sort of bored with it. It's just kind of, it's one of these, I think it reminds me of films, something like, say, Easy Rider, where it's like the sort of film where if you're a film fan, you're expected to like it. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, because it was sort of in its own way, was sort of like, you know, different at the time and stuff.
It's a film that I understand why it's popular. There are those scenes. There is that story. There is that message behind the film. And like we were talking about earlier with our Batman vs. Superman review, its parts are better than its sum. There's some ideas that they play with. There's some scenes. There's some lines that are great. But when you watch the film together as a whole, I think it's an abortion. I think it's an abomination. And of course, some of it obviously is to my... If I watched this film in a vacuum, maybe I wouldn't have thought so poorly of it. But it's supposed to be this great film, this classic film that everybody needs to see. Stanley Kubrick, especially. I'm also willing to admit, I'm also biased against him, so that doesn't help my review as well. But if you watch this movie in a vacuum, you might think, it's a decent film. It's all right. It's good. But when it has that reputation, when it's that 800-pound gorilla in the room, when we were doing this rundown, that's the one that really stuck out like a sore thumb to me. And that's the one I absolutely need to go off on. So I'm willing to admit I have my biases, but that for considering it's my pick for Slate, that's why I picked it.
Yeah. I totally get where you're coming from. Have you ever? I'm guessing you've never tried to read the novel.
I'm sure if I read the novel, it won't be done with that Stanley Kubrick directing. So maybe I'll probably like it a little bit better.
I try reading the novel, and the novel's kind of it's just written in this like really weird style.
No.
I just found it sort of. If you ever read William Gibson or anything like that, it's that kind of sort of like, you know, quite. He plays around with language quite a lot, but it makes it sort of really hard to sort of like, you know, form any sort of narrative to it. But yeah, so I wasn't a fan of that.
Okay, it is what it is. All right, let's talk our closing segments. Dazza, what have you been reading as of late?
Been reading quite a lot of stuff actually since we last spoke about this. If you remember a few weeks back, I talked how I'd raided a bargain bucket for a few things to read. And I finished the last one of those, which I got out, which was Section 8, which was basically written by Garth Ennis, which I didn't even know he'd actually come back to these characters. But many years ago, he did a comic called Hitman, and he had some supporting characters in this. And they were a superhero group called Section 8. Which was basically just this ragtag of real superhero losers. You know, you had, they were basically led by a guy called, I forgot the guy's name, 8-Ball, who was basically just this drunk in a superhero costume. And he basically had this group who were basically just like the biggest losers ever. There was a character called Friendly Fire, who was like this really powerful guy, but he would basically, whenever he tried to shoot villains, he'd always miss and hit his own team. That was the thing. And there was also other characters in there. There's a character called Bueno, who was a real disturbing character, because he was obviously like a sex pervert. And it never really showed you what he did when he was in combat, but because the panel would always like switch away, you just see people's like disgusted reaction. But the implication was that he was kind of like a molesting superhero.
Mm-hmm.
This is very Garth Ennis stuff. And then the character was my complete and utter favorite was the dog welder.
Yeah.
And the dog welder was basically, his whole thing was that he would just weld dogs to people. That's what he did. If he was in a fight with such like villains and stuff, he would basically just start welding dogs to the faces and stuff like that. It was just like this, just his character. For some reason, I got a kick out of.
It's not a character with a lot of nuances. He isn't metaphorically welding dog. No, does he wear a welder's mask still? I forget.
Because they actually killed off the whole team in the Hitman comic, because Garth Ennis was. When he was bringing Hitman to a close, he basically likes to tie up loose ends, so he basically killed them all off. And this is kind of, but it turns out that a few characters survived and they're like building a new team. But the dog welder, I don't think it's the original dog welder. I think this is a new dog welder. he basically has the weld and the welder's mask and everything and a large supply of dogs. So this basically comic is like kind of like a rebirth of that. And what's funny about it's basically just a really funny comic, but the idea is that they've got seven members and they're trying to recreate, because they're called Section 8, because we have eight members, they're basically trying to recruit an eighth member. So the two issues that I got, one was where they basically trying to recruit the Martian Manhunter. And then the other one is where they're basically trying to recruit Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And it's just basically just like, just really funny stuff. And it plays around with sort of like, the whole superhero thing, because there's a scene where they show what all superheroes talk about when they're all alone and stuff like that. And it's just Garth and it's just having fun. But, for me, I just really, really enjoyed reading it. And the other thing that I've been reading a little bit of lately is some Judge Dredd stuff.
Ooh, some contemporary stuff or classic Judge Dredd?
No, some contemporary. The thing is, I've not read much of the newer stuff. I've read a lot of Judge Dredd, but I've already read the stuff like Cursed Earth, Apocalypse War, all the sort of old classic ones. So I've not read the newer stuff. I was surprised how much it's changed and how solid it is as a comic. Basically, there used to be like many themes that were below the surface, like authoritarianism and that sort of thing, but it was sort of like more theme, more abstract. Now it's sort of like it deals with stuff a lot more politically. I mean, some things basically happen. There was a storyline that basically is about the 1 million men march, which was like this protest through Mega City One, which was basically like, wanting to bring democracy to the city. And it turns out that Judge Dredd actually sort of like worked underhandedly to undermine that protest and stuff. And this actually has a lot of implications for a lot of the stories that I'm reading at the moment. There's a really famous story called America that I've read, which basically is about a woman who's like kind of like a protester and a freedom fighter. And it's showing things from the citizen's point of view of what it's like basically living under under the judges, basically, and having this authoritarian, however you say it,
okay.
World. And it's just like, really, strong, political, timely stuff. And another of the ones that I've just started reading, it's basically where Judge Dredd basically quits the police and basically goes on what is called the Long Walk, where you basically go into the wilderness to basically try and bring, law to the lawless. And it's just basically the reason why he does this is his conscience starts to get the better of him. Somebody, this kid sends him this letter asking him what the sort of things he did during the 1 million man march, if he sort of, and if all judges are good and stuff like that. And he starts to question his role in the actual sort of, in the society that he's, and the sort of, the role of the judges in that. And it's just, you can see that it seems to be planting the seeds for him becoming a more politically aware character and stuff. And actually sort of like starting to basically, fight back against the system somewhat. So it's like some really, intriguing stuff. So that is kind of, that's what I've been reading. And also the artwork of it is sort of like, because it's the Tough House AD, it went to a more sort of like from a drawing and ink style, it went to a more like sort of art painted style, like, you know, really vividly done. So it's, yeah, so that's what I've been reading and really enjoying it as well. I actually ended up buying like a whole stack of Judge Dredd sort of, you know, the modern stuff that I'm going to be working through. But the, like I said, the ones that I've read, you know, the America Saga, which I, you know, I really, really recommend. And then the one where he, Dredd basically goes into the wilderness. Just some, you know, really good story. And it's interesting to see how much the character has actually grown from, like, you know, the sort of, you know, the those classic storylines. So they're the ones I've, that's kind of what I've been reading lately.
Okay. And to sort of keep up with that theme, what have you been watching as of late?
Well, I've been to the cinema, a hell of a lot. To say the least, I've seen quite a few films lately. The films that I've seen that really stick out, I went to see High Rise, mm-hmm. which was basically based on one of my favourite books of all time, which is High Rise by J.G. Ballard. And this one, it's this weird film because it's set in the 70s, but when it was, which is when the book was written. But when it was written, it was given like a futuristic style scenario. When the scenario in, but basically people are living in these massive tower blocks, not dissimilar to the sort of tower blocks you would get in Judge Dredd. But in these tower blocks, you had kind of like almost a whole society in that you would basically get floors, or the top floors you would get sort of like, you know, the rich and everything, and you'll get the more working class people down below. And basically what happens in this tower block is law and order starts to break down. People start forming factions and stuff. And then people who have kids start forming factions against people who don't have kids. And just sort of basically all anarchy starts breaking out into this thing, into the fact that the people basically take over this block. It's kind of this film. It's 2 hours. It could have done with being, I think, a lot shorter. It just kind of, you know, there's certain bits where it's showing all the carnage and stuff that just seem to go on and on. But it's Tom Hiddleston who's the starring role in it. And it's just sort of like it's a good film, but it's kind of a film that basically would sort of like sit well in the 70s. It's, you know, it's very anarchistic and everything. And it's, I kind of liked it, but it was kind of a film. But it's one of those things where you watch and afterwards you think that was good, but when you're actually watching it, it can be quite sort of hard to like sit through, basically, you know, because it just basically, so certain scenes would just sort of go on and on and on. But it's sort of, you know, it's very, you know, it's quite a zany active film. Other films I've been watching, I went to see Zootropolis. Actually, I went to see Zootropolis before. I went to see Batman vs. Superman on Friday. And that was a wonderful film. it's one that sort of, you know, adults could take the kids to see and really, really enjoy themselves. It's sort of basically set in this world where it's populated by basically animals who are like sort of like have human jobs and that sort of thing. And you've got a rabbit who becomes the first rabbit to be in the police force. But it's just done so well because there's lots of like themes about sort of like, you know, prejudice and stuff in there. And there's also lots of humor. I mean, the film is funny. I mean, get this.
What I've seen from the trailer, yeah, in fact, looks like a very funny film.
It really is. I mean, there's a scene where they go down to the DV LA, and there's all the people behind the counter are all sloths, so they basically do everything really slow. But there's even a reference to Breaking Bad in there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in a Disney movie, you know. And I don't want to sort of, you know, go into too much in how that comes about, but yeah, there is a Breaking Bad. It's just a really fun thing that kids will actually love because of all the sort of, you know, the characters in there. But there's like, you know, the story itself is like really, really tight. And there's lots of sort of like, you know, like knowing humor that adults will love as well. I think, you know, people often sort of like have a real thing on Disney because we're a corporation and everything like that. But the fact of the matter is that you look at their back catalog, they do good films. You know, they good, you know, do good, really solid films.
Yeah. And here's what I call films like this. They're not children's movies, because there are children movies out there that, you know, I'm sure that adults or parents hate going to, because
like the Chipmunks films.
They're very much made for children in mind, and they cater to children, and they realize the parents are there. Maybe you'll get a joke, but for the most part, the movie's made primarily for the children. This film this film and many others that Disney makes, as well as Pixar, I call these films family movies.
Yes.
That the children can watch and they can enjoy on one level. The parent or adult accompany them can watch the film and enjoy on another level. So it's one of those perfect, it's one of these perfect films that Disney seems to do better than anybody else, that just entertains everybody. So if you haven't already, I'm sure I'm going to check this movie out. This film has received nothing but good, you know, good vibes, and from someone who's walked the halls of WonderCon, I saw tons of cosplays of it. So it's a film that I'm sure that's done very well, and maybe when I get around to watching it, I can do a very quick review a couple weeks later.
Yeah, yeah. And another film that was like a really good feel good film was the Eddie the Eagle movie, which I don't know how well known he is over in America, but basically in the Winter Olympics many, many years ago, he became sort of like a brief celebrity in the UK because he was basically the first ski jumper, you know, to basically represent the UK. And he was basically all self-funded and everything like that. Now this film, it's not a straight, true-to-life depiction of what went on. It's not like a biopic of it. What it does is it takes his story and then basically dramatizes it. So it basically, you know, it basically what it's done is to basically make like a very sort of like against the odds type, you know, character. And it plays loosely with a lot of the facts. I mean, for one thing, it portrays him in this film a lot younger than he was actually when he actually went to the Olympics. He basically sort of seems to make out that he was like in his early 20s, just, you know, living with his parents and, you know, just out of school and that, when he actually was quite a bit older. So it plays around with stuff and it creates like, you know, characters like the coach is played by Hugh Jackman. It basically, that was sort of like, you know, a character that was basically pretty much, you know, created just, you know, for the film. But the film itself, it is really, really funny. Just following, you know, the adventures of this naive guy who basically thinks that he's basically, you know, as can basically get to the Olympics. But, you know, he follows his dream and he manages to get there and everything. And it's just like a really fun story, really funny. The young guy who plays Eddie the Eagle, could not recognize him from this film because he was the guy who was in the spy film? Oh, God.
Which film are you referring to?
The Secret Service film where the young kid became what do I call it? The Kingsman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was the kid. He was the kid in the Kingsman, and he's so unrecognizable from that because he does such a great job of basically, you know, as Eddie the Eagle. And if you ever saw Eddie the Eagle, he was this kind of goofy, you know, this guy that went to your hearts, but he was really, you know, a really goofy guy, you know, quite an eccentric. And he gets all the mannerisms so great in this film. you know, he basically sort of like, you know, the stuff he does with the chin and everything like that. It's just, you know, but the whole film's just like, you know, really funny, you know, really wonderful, feel good. And you are basically, you know, really rooting for him because the whole thing about him was that he was going to finish last in the Winter Olympics. His whole thing was that he was basically just there to compete and just to compete on the level. And he actually did change the Olympics because afterwards they basically brought in these, because he managed to get in by loopholes and stuff. And he basically changed the Olympics in a way that they basically brought in minimum requirements to actually compete in the Olympics.
Ooh.
Afterwards. I think it was like the Eddie the Eagle rule of sort of something. You had to basically be at a certain standard to actually get in there. Mm-hmm. But it is a really real good film, one which I really recommend. It's been out in America for quite a while now, so it might have been and gone. But in the UK, so I saw a preview showing and it's been shown. It starts popping next week, so that's a good one. And the last film that I saw recently was 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Ooh, I'm curious to see what you have to say on this film.
Yeah. I absolutely really, really enjoyed the film. Mm-hmm. It absolutely scared the hell out of me. John Goodman is absolutely terrifying in this film. the only thing is you've got to go in there, you know, which is kind of a spoiler, but not a spoiler in the fact that this has nothing to do with the first Cloverfield film in any way.
That's what I figure, yeah.
Yeah, they've just basically put the name Cloverfield sort of a tag for this kind of sort of like, you know, film. Basically, like, almost like a Hammer House of Horror type label to it. Mm-hmm. But the film is, you know, the film going there to watch this film because it is so tense. It's basically like a sort of one of these films where there's a girl who's basically, she's trapped in like an underground bunker, with these two people. And it's kind of like, he basically tells them that basically, everything's broken down on the outside, that this is, there's been an apocalypse. And it's sort of this thing like, has something happened? Is he lying to them? And sort of thing. And John Goodman is absolutely terrifying in this film. It reminds me a bit of, if you ever saw Misery.
Yes.
Yes. It's that kind of sort of like, you know, sort of trapped and sort of like trying to work a way to get out sort of thing. And just, but it is, you know, John Goodman is terrifying because his character is kind of, one minute is kind of like really, really sort of nice and everything. And then if somebody says the wrong thing to him, he just kind of turns. So it's like a really unstable character. And it's one of those performances that I'm not saying that he's going to get an Oscar nomination for this, but if this was a more, what's the word? If this was like a sort of a higher, done by a sort of more highbrow studio with sort of, you know, and if he didn't have a Cloverfield thing, I could see him getting nominated for this because he is absolutely terrifying.
Well, he may, but yeah, like you said, I don't know if those will walk away with any other awards, but he may get a nomination out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how we actually classify, whether we classify him as the lead actor or is it in the supporting role. But yeah, have you actually seen this film?
No, but I listened to, of all things, and we were talking about this a little bit off air, I listened to John Goodman talk about it on the Howard Stern Show, so I know what the film is about. I you know, he sort of went at length to talk about what the film was about, what it was like in the making of it, of him acting in it, so I mean, this is something that I'm not completely oblivious to.
Yeah, it is one of these films that the best way I can describe it is that you tie yourself in knots in the cinema in your seat, because it's kind of like a... it's basically just like a horror movie done really, really well, you know, where it's all about, you know, it's not so much about sort of, you know, gross out sort of violence or anything like that. It's about tension and being naturally, you know, scared in this film. But you know, but it's one I heartily recommend.
Okay, and since we're talking cinema, we forgot to do it in our usual segment of where we talk rate and slate, but one of the things we want to do is... sort of, I mean, we're still talking about film, so, but from now on, we'll be doing the segment as far as the rate and slate them. But since we're talking film still, we're going to compare our picks to rate versus what was considered the best picture. Now, when we were doing research on this, we were doing research on 1971 movies. The thing we came up was, because the Oscars gives the Oscars the year following, the Oscar that was given for 1971 was for films that came out in 1970. So from going on forward, whenever we compare our ratings and slatems to what won Best Picture, just keep that in mind. So we're talking 1971 films, and what won Best Picture in 1972 for that year, 1971, was The French Connection.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, if it wasn't for Dirty Harry, That would have been the one that I actually picked. French Connection.
Not a bad film. Not a bad film.
Yeah, it's a cracking film, and sort of like, you know, really of its time. I mean, and it's also about the performances. I mean, Gene Hackman's great in it. Roy Scheider as well. You know, as the two cuts between them, it's like, you know, a really, really good film. Mm-hmm. It's also, and again, it kind of fits in a little bit with the sort of like the vibe of that Dirty Harry had, in the fact that it's kind of like a set in a thing where the police were basically, you know, fighting a war on crime and basically losing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be sort of like, you know, it's all about the sort of, you know, the drug, you know, the drug cartels and basically trying to bring them down. And it's a very sort of, it's a lot more, it's a very bleak film because they're basically, they fail in the end, but you know, it's an absolutely great film. And it's also got that absolutely amazing car chase scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're basically from the point of view of the car itself, and you're basically going through the traffic and you almost hit a woman with a pram and everything. And it's just a absolutely cracking film. I'm not surprised with it, but it won Best Picture.
Okay. Neither am I. All right, I think that's going to do it for this.
Oh, I'm just looking. Guess what got nominated as well that year?
Oh, Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
just there, don't just troll me. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, and he got nominated for the best director as well.
Yeah, but he didn't win.
No, he didn't win.
All right, Daz, I think it's going to do it for this week's show.
Yep.
All right. You know, we haven't talked about this, and I'm sure we're going to have maybe our difficulties when we actually come around to doing this, but I will be in Dallas, Texas next week, next Sunday. This is when we do the show. I mean, Coughlin releases the show whenever he feels like. More often than not, it's Monday, though, or Tuesday. But keep in mind, going forward, we may – now, to the listener, we may just try to reschedule it, try to figure out around my schedule and Dad's schedule, or I may just try to do it from Dallas, Texas. So just keep that in mind if for whatever reason why our show doesn't pop up next week.
Is something going on in Dallas, Texas next week? Any show of any sort?
Yes. As a matter of fact, both me and Comic Conversations host Dave are going to be in Dallas, Texas to watch WrestleMania. Now, well, I don't know if we're going to be watching the WrestleMania show itself, but there'll be shows the days before, surrounding the event that we're going to be watching. They're going to be attending. So that's something I'm very looking forward to. So just keep that in mind. We're going to try to fit it in both our schedules, or maybe I'll just do it from Dallas, Texas. But just keep that in mind, maybe just in case, for whatever reason, why there's not a show next week. Okay? So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Bye.
See ya.